The Financial Sense Midweek Edition with Jim Poplava. Delving in-depth with authors and experts into the key economic issues.
Well, exercises for osteoporosis are a confusing subject. There are exercises for prevention. There are exercises for rehab. And when osteoporosis is present, there's always the issue of exercise safety. Joining me on the program today is Rebecca Rotstein. She's an expert in osteoporosis, bone health, and Pilates. Rebecca, let's start with your own personal situation. I guess in your life, you had osteoporosis. How did you arrive at Pilates and develop the programs that you currently lead now?
Well, Jim, it's actually a little bit of a reverse story for me. I was already a Pilates instructor, and then I found out that I had osteoporosis. So it all really starts way back when I was a ballet dancer many years ago. And this is not an uncommon phenomenon that, like many high-level athletes, women who are ballet dancers are predisposed to osteoporosis because of their low weight, perhaps nutrition, their size, etc. So once I had quit and I was already a Pilates instructor, I learned that I had osteoporosis, and I was already doing teacher training and knew about osteoporosis, but I really changed my path to specialize in it at that point.
Now, you were a Pilates instructor before that. I know that depending on what Pilates studio you go to, some specialize in doing mat work. Others specialize in the different forms of Pilates equipment, from reformers, Cadillacs, chairs. And gosh, you go to some of these Pilates manufacturers today, and they're coming out with all new kinds of contraptions. So when you talk about Pilates, and especially the kind of work that you do, we've heard about weight-bearing exercises help prevent osteoporosis. How does it do that? And specifically, contrast, let's say, doing Pilates with, let's say, weightlifting equipment.
Sure. Well, let's first back up to explain about Pilates. So there are so many different styles, so to speak, when you hear about people teaching Pilates, that they all should have still the same cornerstone principles: breathing, coordination, centering, control, precision, flow. Those are considered these principles of Pilates. So that should be a unifying thread wherever you go, whether you're using equipment, whether you're just doing it on the mat. The types of exercises that people are doing, there's a standardization, but there are so many different exercises that many people are now bringing in. However, when we talk about how weight-bearing comes in, what that means, let me explain that. There's something called Wolf's Law, which basically is a phenomenon that explains that bone is sensitive to external forces. It will reshape itself. It'll alter its mass, its structure in response. It's kind of like the way that your muscles change in their shape when you exercise, when you work out. So bone is living tissue, and it does the same thing. And specifically, there are different techniques that are useful. One is called weight bearing, which is literally just bearing or using your body's weight. So when you're standing, when you're walking, you're doing weight bearing movement. Also, when you're on all fours, that's weight bearing for your wrist. So it's not just in a standing position. The other way that bone will remodel itself and basically reinforce itself is through resistance exercise. So that's when your muscles are pulling against the bone. There is a fortification or reinforcement that occurs. So whenever you're lifting weights, for instance, you're doing that. Whenever you're using stretch bands, your muscles are activating. Whenever you're doing, say, even like a yoga exercise or a push-up, you're using your own body's weight, but your muscles are still working. You're getting resistance. So you can be doing with Pilates something that's unique that doesn't happen in a lot of other techniques, especially when you're using the equipment, for instance, is that you don't have to be weight bearing to get the external force. There are springs that will make your muscles work, but you can also do Pilates without equipment. So So for instance, some of the mat work, you're getting your muscles to be working against gravity. So that is one way that makes Pilates possibly different from other modalities. Another thing, though, that I would like to mention is that the beauty of Pilates is the control component. So much of the focus occurs on the lengthening phase of a muscle, and the control is really critical also for balance. And we've seen in research how muscular control can also help your balance. And balance is a really important factor for osteoporosis, because the danger about osteoporosis is the possibility of fracture. And if you fall, you have a much more likelihood of fracturing.
You know, you talk about osteoporosis, but we see this in aging as individuals get into their 70s and 80s. We hear about, you know, older people falling, breaking their hips. It's also important in the aging process to not only keep your bones strengthened, but also to keep that flexibility so you don't, let's say, have the propensity to fall and injure yourself. Let's talk about that and how Pilates is very useful in keeping, maintaining not only bone health, but also flexibility.
Absolutely. Well, you know, as we're talking about the risk of falling, it's interesting because so many people think about osteoporosis as a concern for the elderly. But it's estimated that 1 in 2 women and 1 in 4 men over 50 will break a bone from osteoporosis. And the most common area of fracture in the early postmenopausal area, so we're talking like women in their 50s, is fracturing a wrist. And guess how that happens? It's not because they can't stand, it's because they trip on something. And so balance comes into play, but not just balance, but also stimulating your reflexes. So if you start to fall off balance, can you catch yourself before you fall, right? So what's your reaction time? How quickly are you able to recover? Your recovery speed is really what we should call it. So Pilates is very useful because it is a full body exercise. So, you know, people think so much about the core. There's that term, this ubiquitous phrase, the core now. And it really was meant to be referring to the musculature of the trunk and the abdomen. So the abdominals, the low back, the pelvic muscle, the breathing muscle as well. So that is certainly a primary component of Pilates that gives you that sense of control. But there's also an aspect of flexibility, and all the movements are full body. So you're not just working just the abdominals, for instance. It's not like you're just doing a crunch. There's intention throughout the entire body. And so your feet are never just dangling. They're always active. And the feet are your contact point with the ground as well, which will also help you in terms of balance. But flexibility, as you say, comes in as well. And part of this is because it's Pilates is a whole body movement form. But also it goes back to what I was saying before of the lengthening phase of muscles, which is really where they get their strongest. And that's also where you can change the resting length of a muscle. And that's where people think of the quote flexibility. And here's another example for you. Say that I'm asking you to do what we call safe movement, and I'll come back to that in a little bit. In other words, I want you to be picking something off the ground in a safe manner, just in like your regular daily activities. That's going to require a certain amount of flexibility if I'm asking you not to bend through your back. That means that you're going to have enough hip mobility and range of motion at your ankle in order to do that. So it's not just, oh, can I touch the floor with my hand with straight knees? You know, that's what I think people often think about is flexibility. I think of flexibility is as much more than that. It's agility, and it's your ability to perform your daily activities safely, whether that's playing with your children or grandchildren, whether that's cleaning your house, whether it's picking up your groceries.
I know a lot of Pilates movements sometimes resemble some of the movements that you see in yoga. Contrast, let's say, Pilates versus yoga, because sometimes a lot of the movements look the same.
They do, and I think there's a good reason for that. Well, yoga's been around for thousands of years, but Pilates was developed by a man named Joseph Pilates, who really cultivated his system during the First World War. He was in an internment camp overseas. He started looking at ways to strengthen the body, particularly for the sick inmate, but also he had been very sickly as a child. So he drew upon a number of different systems and modalities that were already existing, but also mimicking animal type motions, observing cats, for instance. And he drew upon his background as a boxer, for instance. So you will see a bunch of different similarities with certain Pilates movements, but I don't teach yoga. I am a yoga practitioner myself. So I do both. I find them very different, but I also find similarities between the two. And typically, you will find in a yoga class, it will end on the ground, where typically most standard Pilates classes will begin on the ground. The intention behind the exercises is very different. Yoga can include a spiritual component of it, but the asanas, which are the poses, are just really one aspect of the bigger picture of yoga, whereas Pilates does not in itself innately have a spiritual teaching component to it. Pilates also grew out of that rehabilitative component, whereas yoga did not.
Let's talk about the different forms of Pilates, because I know that we mentioned there's mat work, now there's reformers, there's the Pilates chair, there's the Cadillac, you have reformer Cadillac combos. There's so many new kinds of devices that they're coming out with, depending on which company you're looking at. You know, I'm thinking a Balanced Body or a Stott. Let's talk about those pieces of equipment and what are the advantages versus, let's say, just doing simple mat work.
Well, first of all, let's clarify that the reformer, originally known as the universal reformer, is definitely not new. The Pilates chair is not new. These are all the contraptions, so to speak. The Joseph Pilates was originating, again, in the mid-teens of the 20th century. So this isn't World War One, and that's something I think is an interesting myth to dispel for people to think that this is some fad. Pilates has been around for nearly a century. And it's a proven system, and it's effective, and it works. However, we do have to consider that for certain injuries or conditions, it's not always appropriate. So that is where it needs to be modified for those with osteoporosis. But the equipment, the benefit goes back to what I was saying before of most of the equipment, for instance, the Cadillac, the tower, the reformer, the Wonder Chair, all involve springs. And those springs are really fantastic because they can either serve to challenge somebody or to assist. So depending on the exercise and the positioning, whether you're upright, whether you're upside down, whether you're lying on your back, whether you're on all fours, will determine, and the exercise itself will determine whether the springs are there to create more challenge or to offer you more assistance to perform an exercise. So for instance, say you can't do a full squat just normally. Well, you could do something with the springs that might assist you. You could also, for instance, if you're injured, here's a perfect example. Say you're injured and you really need to do some leg strengthening, but you've sprained your ankle. Well, there's exercises that you can actually do using the equipment that you can still condition yourself while still resting that foot, for instance.
Yeah, because I notice, Rebecca, in a lot of the reformers, some will say rehab reformers versus regular reformers. Is it the difference in height that makes the difference between the two?
Not really the height, to be honest. The height is what assists the instructor or the practitioner. First of all, it would be about the tension of the springs, but it would also be about the configuration of the machines. With a rehab reformer, there will be more options and there will be more adaptability in terms of positioning of the piece of equipment so that you have the option to change the angles. It comes down to physics, basically, of degrees of load, degrees of force, angles of joint positioning. And so the more options you have in terms of how you can adapt the piece of equipment to somebody's body, the more capacity it has for rehabilitation.
Now, this is something I assume you're an instructor. You would recommend if somebody's starting out in Pilates, maybe they get instruction, because I know control of breath, the different movements. If you don't know what you're doing, you can injure yourself.
Most definitely. I think it's important for people as much as possible to have private instruction or at least very small group attention, because it's almost like you're learning a new language. And you're also trying to reprogram old habits. So if you're used to always walking in a certain way and that's causing you some problems, then you have to rewire your circuitry. And I like to explain the Pilates system, but not just Pilates. all sorts of movement education that I deal with as rewiring your circuitry. Initially, it's a conscious effort to think, oh, I have to think of pulling in such and such area of my body or activating such muscle or breathing in this way while I'm doing such and such exercises. But then it becomes more unconscious. So it starts out as a conscious state, but then it becomes more automated. And without any kind of awareness of how you perform certain exercises or what you might be doing, you might just be reinforcing old patterns, especially if you're coming to this because of a pain or because of an injury. There's something that got you there in the first place. Perhaps it was an impact injury, right? Or you fell. But more often than not, it's just a repetitive injury. There wasn't something that led to the fact that you now have pain when you lift your arm up overhead. But it's a repetitive action. You can do it for years and years. And then after, you know, the thousandth time that you're doing something in a certain way, your body says, okay, no more. And so you have to relearn or repattern the way that you're performing that movement. And that's where the private instruction can come in really handy, because it can say, oh, this is what you're doing, and this is what will be helpful for you to do instead, so that you can learn a more efficient and a more effective way of doing it to get the most out of the movement or to reduce your pain.
So we talked about the advantages, and you've developed a program specifically using Pilates designed to combat or aid in osteoporosis. Tell us about that.
Well, going back to what we're talking about with Pilates, Pilates is a fantastic modality, a fantastic movement system for strengthening, for increasing flexibility, coordination, awareness. So when people have osteoporosis, one of the biggest concerns is obviously fracturing a bone, right? That you're more susceptible to fracture. And when it comes to the spine, which is one of the most common types of fracture for those with osteoporosis, the fractures are usually silent. So people don't realize the problem, because it's not like there's pain that's notifying you. And one of the most unsafe movements that can induce a fracture is a forward bending of your back, like curving your back forward. It's called spinal flexion, and it's something that needs to be modified or avoided. And let me first remove any preconceived notion or misunderstanding when people come to me and say, oh, I've been told I can't bend forward. What do I do about picking something off the ground or tying my shoe? We're talking about bending your back. Now, if you bend at your hips, in other words, you know, your hips are, if you sit down in a chair, that's the crease right there, the hip fold. That's fine. That's healthy. But we're talking about bending your spine. That's what you don't want to do. And unfortunately, about 3/4 of the exercises in Pilates involve movement through the spine, because there's a lot of emphasis on spinal mobility and articulation. And that does need to be modified for those with osteoporosis in order to stay safe. But I also found that while Pilates was great, there are other components that needed to be integrated. There needed to be more emphasis on balance. There needed to be more standing work, because we talked about the importance before of weight bearing and how all the bones of the body, the skeleton, including the spine, including the hip, which are, again, the other two really most common for osteoporosis, those sites of the body needed to be integrated. Because the osteoporosis research shows the importance of what we call being site-specific. So exercising and targeting the sites of the body that are most vulnerable to fracture. So that's one of the things that I did with my program. I also brought in other types of movement. I brought in more functional training. I brought in some therapeutic exercises. I brought in some strength training movements. Again, based on the research has shown the importance of strength training, but we also know the importance of control and the significance of balance to prevent falls. And interesting new research, a consensus that just came out last year, shows protocols that are recommended for the medical community for osteoporosis involve exactly what we're doing in our Buff Bones training system, which is involving what they call multimodal components. So using different aspects. So that's really, before this came out, this is something that, you know, I was seeing from research and also just from my own experience as a movement educator, made sense to be bringing in for osteoporosis, strengthening flexibility, the core control, the coordination, the balance, but these different types of movement that would also be very applicable to your daily living, so that it would translate outside the exercise studio into your daily life, including awareness of your body, including additional loads and additional weight that you wouldn't get in Pilates, and also integration of feet. Because again, I can't emphasize enough of the significance and the importance of the feet.
Rebecca, let me ask you this. A number of years ago, I had a reformer Cadillac combination, got into advanced movements in Pilates, and there was a particular exercise I did, I think it was called the plow, where I really injured myself and developed sciatica as a result of the injury. You know, I've gotten rid of it, but what are the limitations? I guess as we age, perhaps there's a limitation on the number of things that we can do. I guess we keep thinking that we're still young, but we're not.
Well, I think that it's not only the matter of age, but also level and individuality. So there's all sorts of advanced exercises within the Pilates repertoire, which you can get away with perhaps not having the most ideal form when you're younger, but when you're a little bit older, your body might not be quite so lenient and forgiving. And this is also where I think when people ask, you know, what does an appropriate Pilates program look like? Or for instance, for osteoporosis, for anything, I always think it's very age dependent. It depends on what your age is. It depends on your physical level and it depends on your previous activity. And so, for instance, the exercise that I think that you're probably referring to is something where you rolled over, send your hips overhead, feet in the air, you're rolling all your body weight onto your shoulder blades. And that's an exercise that does take a certain amount of flexibility. It's most definitely contraindicated, by the way, for somebody with osteoporosis. It's a pretty good way to possibly have a fracture of your spine. But if that's not a concern of yours, it just depends on what it is that you've done to achieve that in the first place. So in other words, how well prepared are you to perform that exercise? And so you want to make sure that you're working with an instructor who has significant training, who is trained in, also ideally knows about certain conditions. So if you come in and you say, you know, I should let you know, I have had a history of a disc herniation, or, you know, I have had a hip replacement or a knee replacement, that your instructor has some kind of understanding of what should be avoided or what would be helpful to be strengthening in that case. How to take those issues into consideration. Because as we get older, you know, we do have more likelihood of different situations. I mean, how many people over 50 do you know with stenosis, right? Really common issues are rotator cuff strain, bursitis, these things that just increase in propensity as we get older. And very frequently can be avoided through exercise, but also how they can be assisted through exercise. And so the more informed and educated the instructor is that you're working with, the better off you're going to be.
So, Rebecca, as we sum up here, there's a lot of advantages, as you have proven, for aiding in the prevention or at least alleviating some of the problems of osteoporosis. In generality, as we age, the importance of maintaining bone strength and flexibility to avoid injury, what would be your recommendations? Is it something that a listener should go see their doctor first and say, I'm thinking of getting involved in this kind of program? I know they tell you to do that if you're going to get involved in a serious exercise program. Should you begin with your doctor and then try to get private instruction or get a class and inform your instructor that, hey, I have certain issues health-wise, whether it's a fractured hip or a broken bone or something like that?
Yes. And in fact, I think that's a great protocol, is to first check with your doctor to advise them about what you're looking to do. One of the challenges that I have to admit is that many physicians are not familiar with some of the protocols with osteoporosis when it comes to exercise, in terms of going to just a Pilates class, if you have osteoporosis, it's possibly going to do more harm than good. Because a traditional Pilates class will involve these exercises where you're rolling onto your back. If you have osteoporosis, that could possibly create a fracture. So Pilates can be terrific, but you need to be either going to a class that is safe for those with osteoporosis. For instance, just the reason why I created the Buff Bone program itself, to offer that option. But you can also, if you're working with an instructor, check that your instructor has taken training in osteoporosis and just to know the safety protocol. But when you go to the doctor, part of my mission has been to work with physicians and to help them understand that, first of all, to tell their patients that exercise is an option in addition to any medications that they might be prescribing, to tell them about physical activity, but also to explain to them about the safety concerns with exercise so that people don't just go and take a type of class that could be potentially dangerous for them. So yes, first, though, talking to the doctor. Second, finding an instructor who is trained in osteoporosis safety. And then third, informing, as you stated, informing your instructor of any injuries and conditions you have. But also, you will probably want to be careful to tell them about medication that you're on, because there might be certain blood pressure medications for which certain movements, certain inversions, for instance, not necessarily with your feet up in the air, but just with your head lower than your heart. If your butt is up in the air, your hands are down on the ground, sort of like a downward dog type of movement, that you might get dizzy. So you just want to keep your instructor informed of your current health status. I think that's important that there is a full community of healthcare practitioners, so that you're working with your physician, you're working with your exercise professionals, and that there's communication between all of them.
Well, I can't emphasize how important that is, because like I know in my own case, I thought I was much younger and I was doing a lot more movements I probably shouldn't have been doing, and the result was an injury. Well, Rebecca, if our listeners would like to follow your work or find out more about the information about how Pilates can help osteoporosis or maintain bone strength and flexibility as they age, how could they do so?
You can go to the website buff-bones.com. Buff, obviously meaning strong, slang for strong. And that is the site where I have information about the Buff Bones system of exercise. But also, you can find an instructor that is near you. We do have licensed instructors around the country and actually in more than 20 countries that are teaching this system of movement.
Well, listen, Rebecca, thanks for joining us on the program. We appreciate your time and efforts, and all the best to you. I hope you'll come back and talk to us again.
Sounds good. Thank you so much, Jim.
You're welcome.
And it's amazing, Jim, how much lifestyle plays in the guests we've had here on the program. Lifestyle and taking care of your health. You know, I tell some of these guys I run into at the gym that are in their 20s, I said, you know, if you take care of your bodies now and don't believe that you're going to live forever type of thing, your bodies will thank you when they're 50 and 60 and 70 and 80, because later on you'll discover you can break. So lifestyle is a very, very important way of dealing with things, right?
Yeah, and also, as you get older, too, when you do break, it doesn't heal as quickly. So, but you know, it's amazing, John, through all this science and medicine that we have, you know, people are living longer, and we are finding the lifestyles that we lead, stress in our life, the type of diets that we have in terms of creating disease. As we've had several authors on this program, almost 80-something percent of all disease starts in your gut. So folks, really pay attention to your diet and try to stay and maintain a healthy lifestyle. Exercise daily, even if it's a brisk walk, or do something to keep yourself healthy. I mean, why work all your life, save up for retirement, and not be able to enjoy it because of poor health? Anyway, as always, we've run out of time again. We have a lot of great shows coming up here in the weeks ahead. On behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSN. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense NewsHour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the NewsHour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.